Hey, gang, this is Masad Ayoub. I'm here to tell you to take yourself and ideally your kids and your grandkids to an Appleseed Project shooting event. It's about history, it's about pride in your country, and not incidentally, it's about marksmanship and having a whole lot of fun. I hope to see you there.
Well, I like guns, I like the way they look. I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small, they're for sale, hell, I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns.
Hello, and welcome to New Shooter Canada. Our goal is to inform, update, and entertain the new shooter about the many fun and exciting aspects of sports shooting in Canada. Please remember that the show's content is simply the opinions of the hosts and our guests. And remember what they say about opinions, everybody has one. So without delay, let me introduce our hosts, George Hatch and Tom Donnelly.
I like guns.
Hello and welcome to episode 25 of the New Shooter Canada podcast. This week, Tom is going to talk about gun grips. I'm going to join the new shooters and sit back and learn something because this is a topic I don't know anything about. So I'll be enjoying the information along with the rest of the new shooters. And before we get to that, I'm going to cover some observations I made when I was at the range this weekend. So I will let Tom start off with what he did in guns. And Mr. Tom?
Hello, everybody. I didn't actually do any shooting this week. I got the ground power grip mounted on my 10-22 that I was talking about last week. I made quite a mess with the Dremel tool, getting rid of all the ribs on it, but it seems to fit it. It looks kind of Frankensteinish, but it works. And I also got an email from listener Mark Price asking if he could buy the extra large grip that I have left over. When I bought the extra originally, it didn't come with the back strap, so I ordered the three extra back straps. And then the Excalibur came with the three back straps, so I have six back straps. The actual large one fits my hand really well, but because my thumb is so far back, I can't hit the mag release with the largest button, and I have to change my grip to do a mag change, so this isn't good. So I prefer the mid-sized back strap. So I put the extra back straps in my range bag, and when we go to the charity shoot, I'll give Mark a mix to see which one fits his gun price. But that's about it this week. I just haven't had time. With the March break, they screw off my off days, and I'm off Sunday instead of Monday this week. So hopefully next weekend I'll get out to the range and sight in my 22 to get all set up for the Appleseed. What about you, George? What did you do with guns this week? As we hear dead space. George.
Oh, I should take my microphone off mute. Oops. Okay. After recording the episode last week with Trevor on the air parts, he stayed on the line on Skype, and the three of us were kind of chit-chatting. And while we were chit-chatting, Trevor's like, well, you know, you could install the front takedown pin. I was like, oh, okay. So I did that. And then he's like, well, you know, while you're at it, you can, you know, install the rear. And, well, while you're at it, you can install this part. Next thing you know, hey, my lower parts kit's all installed. So I guess I'd be kind of a shout-out for Trevor for spending another hour. It shouldn't have taken an hour, but because I was grossly unprepared and had to wander all over the place for stuff, so it took me a bit longer, but I got everything except for the bolt catch installed just using my hands. And, well, actually, no, the hammer pin was put in using the method that Trevor had mentioned on the show about using like a guide using a screwdriver to guide it through. No disrespect to Trevor. I found that didn't work for me personally. Just kind of manhandling the hammer into place and then putting the pin in, that seemed to work for me. But like Trevor mentioned, there's a lot of tension on that spring. So to each their own. I was able to use his technique, and just it couldn't get the pin in. So that's what I did. Kind of, I guess it would start as what I did this week in guns, because technically it was after the show, right?
Well, did you get a chance to put the swivel in your Savage yet?
No, I'm going to probably do that the next weekend or the weekend, no, the weekend after is the Appleseed. I got March break off, so I was planning on doing it during March break.
Jared was a busy boy last week. He was on our show, he was on the Armed Couple podcast, and then he was on his own show. So he had three podcasts going last week. Did you listen to he did a really good job on this episode of the Armed Couple. I guess they are a couple of squirrels, too, but I listened to it last night on the way home about choosing your first handgun, and he did a really good job.
Cool.
Yeah, he's a very knowledgeable shooter.
So, yeah, so that's kind of what I did up until yesterday, and then I actually got out to the range. But I'm going to save that portion for after the news, because it kind of coincides with what Tom wants to talk about this week in the main topic.
Okay.
Although mine is more rifle-related than handgun, but and Tom's going to be talking about gripping a handgun. So, but it was just some interesting observations that I made. So I will save that for for after the news. So let's move on to the news. I'm going to take the first story here. This is not so much gun-related. This is something that happened at Remembrance Day, and I saw an update come through my Facebook feed, and I thought it was kind of interesting. So it's gun culture-related. That I don't know if people remember back, there was a guy, Frank Grievous.
Gervais.
That dressed up as an army vet and went around, did an interview on CBC, basically impersonating an army vet. So he was charged, and so there was an update. So I'll go ahead and read that. Frank
Gervais,
32, has pled guilty to illegally wearing a military uniform and medals during the 2014 Remembrance Day ceremony in Ottawa at the National War Memorial. The Quebec man pleaded guilty in an Ottawa courtroom today to the unlawful use of military uniforms and unlawful use of military decoration while dressed as a military sergeant on November 11th. Gervais is not a member of the Canadian Forces. Frank Gervais spoke with CBC News on Remembrance Day in Ottawa while wearing a military uniform and medals. The Crown withdrew two charges of impersonating a public officer, Gervais, who is from Cantley, Quebec, was arrested in Ottawa in November and later charged. After seeing Gervais speaking as a sergeant, now it's got quotes around it, on television November 11th, a number of veterans and soldiers called CBC News to question his status as a soldier. The agreed statement of facts in the court Wednesday revealed Gervais, call him Mr. G, was wearing the Canadian Armed Forces ceremonial dress uniform of a sergeant with the Royal Canadian Regiment. He had also donned the Medal of Bravery, Special Services Medal with one bar, Canadian Peacekeeping Service Medals, NATO Medal for Kosovo, Canadian Forces Decoration for 12 years of service.
You wonder where we got it from.
Yeah, well, I guess the 12 years he would have had to have been serving since he was 20, which is not beyond the scheme of reasonable. He claimed to be a paratrooper. Mr. G, misrepresentations on November 11th did not end at the Remembrance Day ceremony. According to the agreed statement of facts, Mr. G and his wife went to the Canadian War Museum, where author Rod McLeod was promoting his book, Vigil. The statement said, there, Mr. G, talked to McLeod and an officer with the Canadian Reserves, falsely claiming he had been a paratrooper and had earned the Medal of Bravery according to the statements of facts. Mr. G was a cadet for several years in the 90s. Well, so was I. But never joined the military. Mr. G's sentencing hearing is scheduled for May 11th. Maximum punishment he can receive is a fine. So Tom and I were kind of talking before the show, and I'm not condoning what he did. The guy's a bit of a dirtbag. But I got to admit, I was a little shocked that you can actually be charged for this. I would not have expected that.
Well, I guess if the charges of impersonating a public officer, they might actually have some sentencing time to it. But like we were saying, it's the same as somebody impersonating a police officer. You're putting a uniform in a person of authority, and people can be subjected to you. And, you know, And not the fact that it's disgusting that he's pretending to be somebody that served his country when he hasn't, because everybody has a lot of respect for members of our armed forces. And to pretending to be a member of an armed force and donning false respect from people, I find it disgusting. I think he should actually get some time in jail, but that's just my opinion.
I agree that it was a pretty scummy thing to do. But if you look at his actions and what he did, I don't think they're on the same level as impersonating a police officer. He went to a ceremonial service in ceremonial dress and did an interview claiming to be an ex-military. To me, that's hugely different than impersonating a police officer. So, I don't know.
It's still a public office. You know, like people have respect and people are subject to the authority of a police officer. And to a lesser degree, people are subject to the powers of a member of the armed forces. If something's, say if there's a civil unrest or a major accident, such as the High River, where maybe the armed forces are called in, you're subject to his discretion. Like if he's, tells you to leave your home. If a member of the armed forces comes up to you and you see a couple of guys in uniform and they ask you to leave your vehicle or leave your home because something major has happened, you'll usually follow their orders. So you're subject to their commands because of the level of respect that you have for these people. I think it's disgusting. I really do. He should have just showed up in his old cadet uniform if he wanted to show some respect. But actually impersonating a decorated soldier, it's...
See, my thing, and the problem I'm having to wrap my head around, he hadn't put himself into a situation where he was telling people to evacuate. This, to me, is no different than somebody dressing up as a cop for Halloween. You're in a context that is not conducive to what a police officer is doing. If you're dressed up for Halloween, you're dressed up for Halloween. This guy dressed up and made up a story. A very scummy thing to do, to go to a Remembrance Day and dress up as an ex-military, a decorated military, and to portray himself as a military. I'm not condoning what he did, and I've got no problems with him getting fined. The fact that there's an actual charge that he could be charged with, that just kind of surprised me. So.
You're not going to get a hold of a Toronto police uniform for Halloween. it's illegal to even possess one.
But look at, you can look at the stuff you can buy on the internet. You can buy knockoff stuff the average person, at a quick look, like if you're in a disaster situation and somebody comes banging on the door, and they look in a high adrenaline situation, they look like they're legit police. Like you're not going to sit there and inspect a uniform, right? So I don't know. I'm not going to argue with the fact that the guy was a bit of a dirtbag for doing this. And you know what? I'm not going to cry tonight because this guy's facing a fine. I don't think he deserves jail time for it. But if he's got a few less pennies in his pocket, I'm not going to cry over that.
Well, there are people that collect police memorabilia. Like I have a friend that's into it. He probably has most of a uniform. He has all the badges and he's got a jacket and everything else. But it's for collector purposes and display purposes because he's a police collector. And there may be people that, like Mr. Gervais, who like to collect military memorabilia, their jackets, the badges, the ribbons and stuff. It's one thing collecting it. It's another thing to go out and actually impersonate any type of officer. And that's why there's laws where you cannot impersonate a public officer. But, I hope they throw a massive fine at him. I would still like to see him get, 90 days in jail or something just to prove a point to people that you can't do it. And maybe he didn't know it was illegal. You don't know.
And this is my own speculation. I've not read but just kind of the initial impression I got was he was just, there's a lot of love being thrown out towards the military, especially on Remembrance Day. And I suspect that he just thought, I feel like I need some of that love and I got this military stuff sitting around and I'm going to dress up and maybe I'll get a bit of attention from people. And, I doubt he actually went out to try and get on camera. Although, when the story goes in how he went to a book signing and then engaged others and started elaborating on the story. So, I don't know. The guy did something really scummy.
I'm glad they busted him. I really am.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. It's one thing to kind of, dress up and just, kind of, I don't know. it just, the guy was just a dirtbag. Or also did a dirtbag thing, rather.
People have used peace officers and officer uniforms for illicit purposes in the past. And people have impersonated officers and then performed crimes. So I think that's one of the reasons that they have the laws in there.
Yeah, but this guy didn't do that. He just, all he stole was attention.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like he didn't try to, you know, go and get a free meal. He didn't try to, you know, I think the guy was just a lonely guy that just wanted some attention. And, you know, I don't know. Still, it's a dirtbag thing to do. You know, people have died for that uniform and for those medals that he's got. And to try to, you know, be a fraud over it. It's a scuzzy thing to do. You know,
it's a level of respect that he was getting that he did not deserve.
Yeah, you
know,
yeah,
there's
totally.
People in the uniform exactly. That deserve our respect and you know, deserve Canada to love and embrace the people that put their lives on the line for our country. And for him to go out and pretend to be one of these people because he is deserving, he needed something, that's not right.
Yeah.
Well, at least they nailed him. At least they nailed him.
Yep. Okay. Now that horse has been turned into glue. Story number two. And originally I had story number two as that shooting at McDonald's, but I kind of heard Friday that somebody else, another show, had covered that. So
I actually have a little more information on that because the guy involved, what happens with the TTC, we have what's called revenue people. And they go to the stations and they pick up the revenue either for the collectors, like the fair media, and they service the MetroPass machines. The security guard was actually a contract with the TTC, and what happens when you do the media recovery job, you're armed with one of these armed guards.
Oh, okay. Let me interrupt here for a quick sec then, because this actually sounds like it's going to be a very relevant additional. So let's just back up and just kind of recap the story real quick. Basically what happened was, armed guard was at a McDonald's getting some food, presumably on a break, lunch break, and two scumbags had broken in, and then there was some gunfire had been exchanged, and I believe the two criminals, I think, were killed, were they not?
What happened is they actually started an altercation at the McDonald's, and it turned into a fist fight, and the guy was getting seriously injured. So he brought his gun and fired a warning shot into the ceiling to scare the two guys off, and they still came at him. So then he used his weapon to defend his life because they were beating the living crap out of him, and he shot and killed the two people that attacked him. But what happens is that the revenue guys are paired with the armed guard. So when you get this job, they won't let the TTC gives you body armor, but they won't give you an ATC to protect yourself. But they hire an armed guard that you travel with. So these guys go from division to division or station to station, as I said, either doing the fare revenues for the collector or doing the MetroPass. So he was actually on his break, and I'm guessing that the revenue guy was out in the van waiting for him. He just came in and get a bite to eat. So he was actually on duty.
Oh, because this is where it was unclear. The boys at Slamfire had kind of hit an impasse because there wasn't enough information in the story to really kind of, because I think it was Trevor was kind of saying no, he had left his place of work where the authorization to carry was for his place of work, and he was no longer at his place of work, therefore not authorized to carry. And then they were talking about armored car guys who were mobile, and because there wasn't enough information in the story, it was hard to really kind of come down on an opinion for those guys just from the lack of information. So this is good. Good to know.
He was actually on duty because where the shooting was where the Coxwell division is. So the maintenance guy was probably just servicing Coxwell subway station, and he probably just stopped to get a bite to eat. See, that the employee will not leave the security guard alone in the truck with the funds and the revenue. The security guard escorts him to the station, does watch out, then they go back to the vehicle. Security guard stays with him in the vehicle. Yes, he does his funds counting or getting up his media for the next station. So, but somebody stays in the vehicle. So I guess I'm guessing that he went in for his lunch break because they worked till 12, 1 o'clock in the morning. Just some of the stations were open to 1:30, 2 o'clock, and this was happening about 11, 12 o'clock at night. So from the location, he was probably servicing Coxwell subway station, but he must, and at night, he must stop at least 50 different locations. So he's not working at one location. He's going from station to station to station to station. And from what I've read in the paper and what I've been told, they were en route from Coxwell Station. And the armed guard, not a security guard, he's an armed personnel that travels with the TTC employee, went in to get his lunch, or maybe both their lunch, because then the revenue guy was out in the vehicle still. And that's when the altercation happened at McDonald's. The two guys actually started the altercation with them. But we won't know for sure what happened in the restaurant until they actually put the footage up, because that McDonald's is a high-crime area. There's been instances there before. So they have video cameras in there.
Oh, well, there you go. And you know what? I should have known better. Something happens in Toronto, I should go to my Toronto contact to get the scoop.
It's funny, the McDonald's, the next one over at Vic Park on Danforth, I walked in there one time, and they just have basically urinal and the toilet. So somebody was using the urinal, so I figured I just went in and used the washroom. I'm doing my business, and I noticed the toilet is actually chain and bolted to the floor.
I can't say that I'm surprised.
So I think this is kind of funny. So, you know, I wash up, wash my hands before I order my food, and I go in, and I order my food, and I ask her, I said, excuse me, I'm kind of curious, why is the toilet chained to the floor? People keep stealing the toilets out of the washroom.
How do you steal a toilet?
Apparently they've had three toilets stolen out of the McDonald's at Vic Park and Danforth. So.
Oh, my goodness.
They have so many. It's such a high crime area down there because it's a really low-income housing with a lot of very poor people. So the crime rate's quite high there. So that's why they've installed all the video cameras at those McDonald's.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so, well, there you go. There's a bit more information on that story. I originally wasn't going to cover it because the boys at Slamfire covered it, but glad I mentioned it.
Well, I just wanted to bring it up because it wasn't actually a security guard that was off duty. He's actually going from station. He doesn't have a stationary place of work. He is paired with a TTC revenue employee, and they travel from station to station to station. So he could be on duty from Scarborough to the west end of the city and then back until all the revenues, then the revenue's taken to the revenue department. Then he's off duty.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the issue that the boys at Slamfire were kind of bringing up was, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the police deemed it a legal shooting, so there's no charges. But I think Trevor was saying that, the police may not be charging them, but what's going to happen with the CFO, they're probably going to come down on them. So I guess it kind of boils down to is how is the ATC worded, and does it accommodate some sort of lunch stops? Like our ATTs, there's no deviation. You stop at a Timmy's, go to jail.
No. That's not how it works. It said a reasonably direct route. So it doesn't say that you have to go from your home to your range. It's reasonable being a human being that you have to go to the washroom. It's reasonable being a human being that you have to eat. There's nothing that says that you can't stop and have a coffee on the way home. You can't go into, it wouldn't allow going to Walmart and shopping for 3 or 4 hours. But if you're en route and you have to go to the washroom, it's reasonable to actually do a normal human body function. You're not feeling well, you need to have something to eat. It's reasonable to go in and grab a burger and then come back.
Yeah, that's...
It's reasonable. Like, they
but
can't...
the problem with reasonable is by whose standards? Because it's going to be the judge's standards that he's the one that's going to be deemed reasonable, not by our standards.
There's been cases in the past where that's gotten through. Like, if you're coming home, you've got a three-hour drive from, say, I'm out in Kingston and I'm doing an IPSC match. They can't expect you to drive for 3 hours after, you know, drinking water all day, not to have to stop and use the facilities. It's reasonable.
Yeah.
Unreasonable would be going into Walmart and shopping for 4 or 5 hours and then going over to your girlfriend's for a couple more hours. That they would nail you on. But if you're en route to and from and you have to go to the washroom or you have to grab a sandwich, to me that's reasonable.
Yeah, no, and I get that. But it's a 20-minute drive from my house to the range. I would have a very hard time arguing reasonable for stopping at a Tim Hortons on the way.
True, but if you had to go to the washroom or if you weren't feeling well.
Again, you know, the cops are going to charge me and say, you know what, you go to court and figure it out. And now I'm spending, what, $5,000-$10,000 in lawyer's fees because I had to stop to take a leak?
I had this discussion with one of our club members because he lives... It's about an hour and a half drive from where he lives to work, and then he wanted to go shooting after work. So he drove with his firearms from his home to his place of employment, had them in the car all day, and then he took them to the range. And in my opinion, that's unreasonable, because they're unattended in a locked vehicle for your whole shift. That they would nail you on. So, you know, that they would go after you for that, because if your car got broken into and your guns got stolen, you can't say, well, I'm on the way to the range, because you're not. You're on your way to work. Then you're going from work to the range.
I guess it boils down to is how much faith are you willing to put into the legal system to determine what is reasonable and what is not reasonable on a case-to-case basis.
Yeah.
Me,
yeah.
I've got no faith. I got zero faith in the system.
It all depends what happens. Like if you...
And I don't have $10,000, $15,000 or $5,000 to try and set a precedent for having to stop at a Timmy's because a 20-minute drive was just too long to make it to the washroom at the club or at home.
Just use your own common sense. If it's a long trip and you have to go to the facilities, it doesn't say a direct route. It just says reasonably direct route.
Again, that word reasonably is so subjective.
Well, yeah, and we're talking about the Ontario CFO here, and they have no reasonable in their mind.
So
they'll say public safety, pee your pants, public safety.
Yeah. Well, I got heated seats, so I could get electrocuted if I peed my pants.
See, good point. Then you have to go or to risk your life.
I wonder if that one would fly.
Okay, on the next news item.
Okay, now that horse has been made into glue. Moving on.
This one comes from the Toronto Sun in Montreal, and is what believed to be a first in Canada. A woman is suing her ex for improperly storing a hunting rifle that their teen son used to commit suicide. Marlene Gaither, or Gauthier actually, wants $250,000 after Oliver Bergenvin, 19, shot himself in the head with a gun on the evening of December 10, 2012, in the Montreal suburb of Laval. The father had custody of the teenager, who suffered from anxiety, and in her lawsuit filed last month, she accused her ex of reckless and gross negligence for failing to store the rifle properly. The Crown has also charged the father with criminal negligence, causing death and negligent storage of a firearm. And the charges are several years in prison if he's convicted. The mother said that Bergervin, had promised to keep the guns out of reach after her son said he feared using them to commit suicide. Oliver's death could have been easily avoided, she said. The Canadian National Firearms Association, while opposing new gun control laws, nonetheless stressed the importance of responsible gun ownership. These rules are very important. Everyone has to take responsibility, said Quebec director Claude Colligan, who lost a sister in the 1989 Polytechnic Massacre. So that's one of the reasons that we have the safe storage laws, because you don't want people that are suicidal or depressed having access to your firearms. So I've never heard of anybody being charged for somebody else's death. But
yeah, and the problem with this is, like, we just don't know enough information. Like,
no.
Were they locked up in a safe with trigger locks, and the son happened to find the keys? It's interesting, because I had a similar conversation with my ex-wife when I got my first rifle, because it was non-restricted, so all I needed was a trigger lock on it, and make sure my front door was locked, and boom, Bob's your uncle, safe storage, right? And so I got into a discussion with my ex-wife, and she wasn't happy with that. And I'm like, well, it's trigger locked, and like, I don't know what else you want me to do. I'd even gone a step farther, and I'd keep my ammunition in an ammo can, and I had a lock on the ammo can, which wasn't necessary, but you know, I did it anyways. And so we were back and forth, and she kind of said something to me that I kind of went, yeah, okay, I got it. And she said, it's an accident that can't be undone. And I got thinking about it. I thought, you know what? I have my keys in a certain place that really they're not going to be able to get to. But how many times has a parent said, well, I thought, right?
Yeah.
So I kind of went, you know what? All right. Canadian Tire had those green things on the steel cabinets with the lock. On sale for $100, I think it was, or something like that. So I was like, yeah, okay, she's got a point. So, you know, now it's trigger locked in a safe, which is locked, and ammunition's kept separate. Is that 100% foolproof? No. And this is kind of what I was saying to her. Like, what do you expect me to do? Do you want me to dig a big trench in my yard, make a big steel or a cement vault, put the lock inside a safe, inside the vault, seal the vault, bury the vault? Like, at some point, you got to eventually say, okay, enough is enough. I've got enough locks between X person and the firearm. Did this guy have a trigger lock inside a safe, and the kid happened to find the keys? Like,
well, the problem is there's no details here. We're talking about the Crown in Montreal, who are staunch anti-gun. First of all, Oliver was 19 years old, so we don't know whether he had access to the key or if he actually broke into the cabinet. Any adult with any type of strength can easily defeat one of those steel cabinets. All you have to do is take the pry bar to the bottom corner. That's your weakest part. You pull up that corner, the first index pops out. You pull the top corner, the second index pops out. So we don't know that the kid didn't break into the safe that was, or the cabinet was legally stored. We don't know whether it was trigger lock and he forcibly removed the trigger lock. If the ammunition was in the safe, then it's legally stored. But it doesn't give any details here. The guns might have been safely stored. We don't know. That's the problem with the Crown's going to go after anybody.
Yeah. Well, and you got to look no further than the Ian Thompson case. His house was being firebombed. They were screaming they were going to kill him. Like, you cannot get any more blatant. And he had it all on camera. And you can't get any more blatant that your life is in danger than that situation. And look at the mess that they put him through. Like, who's to say? You know, I'd like to say, well, if the cabinet was broken into, there was visible signs that it was broken into, you would think they wouldn't be pursuing charges. Well, look at the Ian Thompson case.
You
could get better proof that this man's life was in immediate danger, and they still charged him. So you're right. The kid could have pried open, could have drilled out the lock. Like, he could have done all sorts of damage getting to those guns, but, you know, logic would say, well, then, you know, then he wouldn't be charged because clearly, you know, but this is Canada, right? And to make things worse, you know, our brothers and sisters in Quebec have it even worse. This is coming from an Ontarian. And they've got it worse than us, and we don't have it that great. So it's unfortunate. It'd be interesting to see kind of what happens with this case.
Well, we're talking to Jasmine, and we might have Jasmine on in a couple more episodes to talk about what they actually have to live with the Quebec CFO. You know, the thing that really burns my butt about Mr. Thompson is that on the videotape they were threatening him with death. They're threatening to kill him. They should have been charged with attempted murder. They were threatening to kill him. It wasn't just arson. But the Crown didn't charge them with attempted murder because then they couldn't go after Mr. Thompson with the full force they did. Because if they charged these scumbags with attempted murder, it would have shown that Mr. Thompson had reasonable just cause to defend himself. So they didn't charge him with the attempted murder. They just did the arson charges so they could go after him even further.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's hard to really kind of have much of an opinion on this story just because we really don't have any details. But, you know, I kind of tend to want to side, not so much side with the father, but kind of give the father the benefit of the doubt. Plus, if it's true that the son had already said something about being afraid that he might use the guns to commit suicide, just like, you know, my ex-wife says to me, well, it's an accident that can't be undone. You know, I'm a loving father. I would assume this guy's a loving father. No loving parent is going to want to take a risk that their child is going to use their guns to kill themselves. Legally, did I have to buy the cabinet? No. I was well within my rights to tell my ex-wife. Actually, I had told her to kind of pound salt, then sent her the website for the RCMP safe storage, and then that's when she texted me back and said, okay, well, fine. Yeah, you're legally doing what you're obligated to, but, you know, it's an accident that can't be undone. You know, and it was just that one line that really kind of hit home. I would like to think that this father, knowing that his son's got suicidal tendencies, would have probably gone the extra step. I don't know. Speculation. But, you know, it's a horrible situation that there are no winners in this. The guy's now being charged. It was his gun that killed his son. Well, it was his son using his gun to kill himself. But still, you know, I'm sure the father's looking at it like, you know, it's a mess.
Personally, depending on the level of storage that you have, it would have been a prudent idea to remove the firearms from the home.
Yeah.
One good thing I like about the Canadian Firearm Safety Course, there is a chapter in the book about if you're having traumatic events in your life or if there's somebody in your household that is having issues, it does suggest right in the book to remove the firearms from the home. So it does teach you in the course when sometimes it may be a prudent idea to store your firearms at another location if there is somebody at risk in your residence. So
yeah,
if the kid was, she said he feared, well, the son actually said he feared to commit suicide. So if your kid says, you know, I think I might kill myself, I would do everything I can to get the guns either out of the residence or a level of security where he would not have any access to them.
Yeah. But, yeah, you know, and we just don't know. Did he have, like, a Canadian Tire green cabinet special that was keys or, you know, a safe that has a combination to it?
Well, maybe we should do a little more research to see, actually, because we haven't heard anything from the father. This is just a Toronto Sun news clip out of Montreal, which is going to be biased anyway. So we actually go see if his dad does say anything about the guns were properly stored. And if the kid broke into the safe, there's nothing you can really do. You can put every level of security you want. But anyway, it's sad. Why don't we move on to the main topic? Because I'm getting up.
Yeah. And, yeah, so main topic. I'm going to start off because my segment is going to be probably a bit shorter than yours. And basically, I went out shooting yesterday. And for the life of me, I shoot to the right, and I have not been able to solve this problem. So I'll post up a picture on our website to show my target from yesterday. And it was brutal. Everything was to the right. Everything was to the right. And so then I kind of paid attention to what I was doing with the trigger, and I noticed my finger was all the way into the trigger, and I was like, oh, okay, that's probably what it is. So that corrected it a little bit. But it's not noticeably enough for me anyway, so it's still to the right. And then something had dawned on me, and I had messaged Sticks from Armed Squirrel to find out what episode it was on, and I can't remember, he can't remember, so go back and listen to all the Armed Squirrels, and maybe you'll find what I'm talking about. Anyways, in one of his episodes, he was talking Appleseed. And he was talking, I can't remember the term, but I believe it was something like natural point of aim, where he describes it as you line up your sights, you close your eyes, you take a couple of deep breaths, and then you open your eyes to see where the sights are. And I got thinking about it. I thought, you know what? I'm going to try that. And the first time I did it, I actually left my eyes open, and I just relaxed, and I noticed something. I was torquing the rifle into my shoulder and then pulling on the front end of it to compensate for that torque. So basically I was squeezing my muscles, which was adding that torque, and then compensating with my front hand. So I was like torquing it to shoot left. So when I was squeezing the butt in and tightening up my muscles, it was torquing to the left, and then I pull the rifle with my right hand and pull it back on sight. So I've got two torque points. And so then when I just relaxed and realized what I was doing, I closed my eyes, took a couple deep breaths, opened my eyes, this is what Tom was, Sticks was describing on the show. You reposition yourself, do it again, reposition yourself. You don't move the gun so much, you move your body. And that's what I did, and like my last seven shots were almost dead center.
Excellent.
It just blew my mind. I had my fingertip, instead of putting my whole finger into the trigger, I was like, oh my goodness, I'd already figured that one out, and I'm being a bonehead. Fingertip on the trigger, and then I did that technique, and I couldn't believe it. It was awesome. It was absolutely awesome. And then I shot the Armed Squirrel's target, and made a mess of it. But not much, I was my last 10 rounds and I was on a clock, so I was like trying to do it, and I was like, I just like, ah, it was my last 10 rounds, so I'm like, ah, I'm gonna post it, I'll just do another one. So I just heard something on another podcast, tried it out, and this will go far more into detail when I go to the Appleseed. And this is why I want to go to the Appleseed, is so I can learn this stuff and learn what I'm doing wrong and what to do right. So I just thought I would share that observations. I'm going to post it on post that picture on the website, and what I did is you'll see where I've circled all my shots, but then I've pointed arrows, because it's kind of hard to see, to the ones, the last grouping that I shot, and I think like seven of them were dead center. Well, pretty much dead center. Well, they were good. Okay. They were center-ish. They were more center than the rest of my shots. All right. I'm going to leave it at that. Go to the website, check out the picture, and then I'll turn it over to Tom to discuss gripping a handgun.
Well, just with the natural point of aim, you can do the same thing with the pistol. It's the same thing. You just take your regular stance and your regular grip, you close your eyes, and then bring the gun up where you think it's on target, where you think you actually got your proper sight picture. And most of the time, when you open your eyes, you're actually pointing where you're supposed to be. Your mind, I guess, mentally automatically brings the gun up to your natural point of aim. So you don't even have to actually look at your sights. And when you pull it up to on your target, if you open your eyes, you find out you're going to be pretty, pretty close. It's a fun thing to do, because you actually realize that subconsciously you're actually putting it. And as Stick said, you want to move your body, not the gun. You want to be torquing the firearm. So it's a good idea to find it. Go back and find out what episode that was, and we can put a link up in the show notes.
Yeah, I have no idea. I was talking to him yesterday, and he's like, dude, I don't remember what I said 5 minutes ago. I'm like, well, that's not going to help me. So but you know what he did say? He said to email into the show, and he'll talk about it again. So if you're not listening to their show, listen to their show, and what I'll do is I'll email into him to go over that natural point of aim again, and then he'll discuss it. Because that's, like, it. I'm telling you guys, you know, the veterans probably already know this, but the new shooters out there, I still consider myself a new shooter, because I'm a horrible shot, so obviously I got lots to learn. It was like night and day. I could not believe how different it was once I realized what I was doing. And just close your eyes, you relax your body, and you just close your eyes, take a deep breath, open your eyes, and then you're like, oh my goodness, like, you're like way off either one way or the other. It really blew my mind. So I'll be quiet and let you continue.
Okay. We had listener John write in, and he wanted to learn a little bit about the different grip and dry firing techniques for the new shooter. So I think, we discussed it last show. I sent him a couple of pictures of how I do my grip and your trigger placement on the finger. So we'll just go through a proper grip and maybe a little dry fire exercise that he could do in the end. So first of all, if you're going to practice this, make sure that your gun is unloaded first. We're just going to basically focus on the new shooter today, just the basic fundamentals to get your shots accurately on paper. Competition shooters sometimes will modify the thumb position for a high thumb hold, and that may aid in transitioning from target to target, but you can experiment with that technique if you decide to get into action pistol. Right now, we just want to focus on getting your shots on paper and in the black. So we're going to be talking about the two-handed grip and stance. Not one-handed bullseye shooting today. Bullseye requires a one-handed grip and a different stance and balance altogether. So we just want to get the new shooter on target. So if in a two-handed grip, the first step is to place a gun correctly in your strong hand. Your strong hand is going to be whether you're left-handed or right-handed. So me being right-handed, my right hand is my strong hand. For a semi-auto pistol, the back of the gun should rest high in the crook between your thumb and your first finger. So it's basically the webbing of your hand. And you want to get that webbing as high up as you can under the back strap. So you want to get your hand as high up to the axis of the bore as you can. Now, the placement of the strong hand stays the same regardless what type of grip that you take. So you always want to have the same grip with your strong hand. Now, the first and best type of hand grip for a new shooter is to grip the gun with the strong hand with the thumb wrapped around. So basically your middle finger and the thumb are almost touching on the grip. The support hand or your weak hand is wrapped around the strong hand with the thumb overlapped on the strong hand. So basically you've got your fingers on top of each other, and you have your weak thumb holding your strong thumb down. Now, when firing, you want both arms should be straight, and the elbows should be locked. Some people will tell you that you should have a little bend to the elbow, but the problem is any bend in the elbow will allow the gun to move to that direction and bend under recoil. So if you're going for accuracy, not for speed. You really want to have your arms locked to give you a nice stable platform. We did post we will post a picture on the website to show a proper two-handed grip. Now, once you've established a correct grip, you must perform a proper trigger press. So you don't want to pull or jerk the trigger. This will cause your shots to break in a different direction. So depending on the gun, the striker fire will have the inner trigger. 1911 will have a little bit of take up first. You want to get rid of the take up first. You want to bring the trigger back to the breaking point, and you want to do a slow and smooth trigger press, and it must be repeatable. You want to do the same type of press all the time. You don't want to be yanking it one time and doing it really slow. Try to do the same trigger press for every shot. That'll make you consistent in all your shooting. So what you want to do is the pad on your index finger to place firmly on the front of the trigger. And once you establish a proper grip and a proper trigger press, your skills and scores will improve with practice. I can't stress the amount of practice, because shooting is a perishable skill. If you don't practice and reinforce these techniques, you will lose it over time. Basically, when you're target shooting, you want to eliminate as much movement as possible. So the stance is just as important as your grip. There's basically three different defensive handgun stances. There's the Weaver, the Chapman, and the Isosceles. Weaver and Chapman are named after the guys who popularized them, or the Isosceles is named after a triangular shape made by the shooter's arms and body. All three stances have been used in competition and on the street over the years. Each has their own strengths and their weaknesses. I myself prefer the Isosceles stance for precision target shooting. So basically, you want your feet to be parallel and pointed towards the target. You want your knees straight or slightly flexed. I would get rid of flex. I usually keep my legs locked solid. I usually have my feet about two or three apart. So I have a nice stable platform. So my legs aren't moving, my feet aren't moving. I'm not swaying back and forth or side to side. And if you want a really good website to check out and explain all the different stances that you can go on, Kathy Jackson has the Corner Cat website, and she's got a wonderful page about all the different stances and their histories and which one would be best for you. So if you want to check out a little more about your stances, I would really suggest Kathy Jackson's Corner Cat. It's really, really good. Now, if you want to, there's a good little trick if you want to see how poorly or well you're doing your trigger break. This will require a second person. So what I would do is get a penny or any flat disc, and you want to have somebody with you because you want somebody to actually put the penny on the front sight. So take your stance, get a nice firm isosceles stance, extend your arms, have the gun cocked like you're ready to fire, and have somebody put a penny on the front sight and see if you can do that trigger press without that penny coming off. It's a little bit easier if it's a single action. Try it with a revolver. Try double action. Try cocking a double action revolver and try to do that trigger press, keeping that front penny from falling off the front sight. So that's what I would suggest, John. Have somebody do the penny on the front sight so you can practice your trigger press, see if you're not moving. Try to practice your grip and your stance, and that should get your shots on target and tighter in the black. So any closing comments, George?
Yes. Let me get back to my show notes. So thank you for that. I can't get that picture out of Google Documents and into the show notes, so if you may have to send that to me by text or something. So closing comments, I need to give a shout out to Ben. I'm not going to use his last name because he didn't really write into the show or anything. I don't know who you are out there in Facebook land that unliked our show, but how dare you? I bet you probably don't shop at Calgary Shooting Center either. Communist.
Well, that's so when we dropped down from 164 to 165 to 164.
Yeah, somebody unliked our Facebook page. How dare you? But my man Ben came to the rescue, and he liked our Facebook page. It's the only like we got all week, so I know for a fact it was him. So...
you know what it could possibly be? Because I've screwed around with the armed squirrels. They were just under 1,000. They were 999. They wanted one more like, and I've done it before. And they're asking for that one like, so I went down and I liked them, kept dropping down to 198. I went back later and liked it again. But as soon as I did that, Ours dropped from 164 to 165, so I bet you it was Toby.
That'd be going up, 165 to 164.
Either way, I did before too. I think they're going to break 200.
You're just evil.
You're saying, evil. We're at 199, or we're at 200. I said, no, you're not. You're at 199 because I went in and liked it.
Now, although I can't really be criticizing you too much, because when the Slamfire boys were competing with Jules' library, a whole bunch of us went over and started liking the library's Facebook page.
Oh, yes.
And I was one of them. So I guess I can't really criticize. So
well, Matthew was getting quite upset because the library was having more Facebook likes than they were, and then we're encouraging and then the library shot way ahead of them.
Probably because everyone started liking the library page. So thank you, Ben, for getting us back up to 165. You're the man.
And he's not a communist. No, does he shop at the Calgary Shooting Center?
Doesn't matter. He liked our Facebook page. Whoever unliked us, I think they're a communist.
I have a feeling
can't prove it.
It was payback. So I went back and I liked their page again. So hopefully we'll go back and we should be up to
166.
166 after this show.
The only other shout I got is to my man Trevor. So I think I want to be careful how I word this because I'm kind of jokingly saying it. My co-host's employer may or may not be a communist because of a shift change. We almost didn't get the show out. So, but our schedules were able to overlap well enough. And so shout out to Trevor because he was going to jump in at the last minute to help out if I needed it. So thank you for Trevor, and thank you for hanging out for another hour listening to me crash and bang my way through trying to find things for my AR build and staying online and helping me with that. So you the man.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate it, Trevor.
So
and you only threw me under the bus once.
He did?
Yeah. Give a little, take a little, yeah.
Was that part of the after show?
No, that was in the intro.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. That's okay. I've thrown him under the bus a few times over the years, so I had it coming to me.
Oh, no, that was like a week ago. I don't actually generally, well, I guess it's kind of hit and miss. Sometimes I listen to our show, sometimes I don't.
I usually listen.
Obviously, I didn't listen to our last episode because somebody forgot to turn it down to mono.
That was funny. I guess the guy right now, I guess he's hearing impaired in the one ear, and he had it in stereo, so he was saying he's listening to the show, but all of a sudden he couldn't hear Trevor, so he'd have to take the headphone off, switch it around, so he could hear Trevor's input.
Hey, keep talking. I want to pull that up, so I'm going to give him a shout-out. I got to love the guys and gals that listen to our show, like, late at night after, like, the night I post it.
Well, I'm the same way with him because I blew the speaker in the right side of my car. So when I put the show in, I knew immediately because all of a sudden I couldn't hear Trevor because he's at the right channel. Like, hey, he didn't mix the mono. I haven't had a chance to replace the speaker, so I only have one stereo channel. So if you record somebody on the other channel, I don't hear them.
Yeah, and I love how you don't say anything. You just leave the episode chugging along all messed up. But thank goodness, too. Hold on, I got his name, Mark and Lynn.
He beat me to it.
I don't know if it was Mark or if it was Lynn. That was at like 1 o'clock in the morning.
So he must have listened to it just as we uploaded it then.
Yeah, well, he posted at 1 o'clock in the morning. So when I woke up Tuesday morning, I saw his post, and I was like, oh. And it's weird because when I compiled it, I was like, I feel like I'm missing something. And I'm like, eh, I'm sure it's fine. And then I saw his post, and I'm like, oh. So it took me like all of maybe like 5-10 minutes. I just had to pull up the file, split the stereo, and then re-export it, and it squishes everything into a mono feed. So it's all good. So shout out to Mark. Thank you for listening to our show at the wee hours in the morning so that we saved everybody else that hadn't listened to it yet. So I think I'm done now.
I'm done. I'm tired.
Right.
I lost an hour of sleep. I've only had two coffees. My brain hasn't kicked into gear yet. And I still haven't gone. The dog's crying at my door. He still hasn't gone for his walk yet. So
I just finished hearing my dog barking upstairs. So I think our company has arrived. So, all right. Well, thank you for listening and downloading. And go like our Facebook page. We're only at 165 likes. Show us some love.
I think the New Brunswick Library still has more likes than we do, so please like us on Facebook.
Yeah, so we can have more likes than Jules' library. Although, you know, I don't really get all bent out of shape over this sort of stuff. It's, you know, I look at our downloads, and that's what I care. I just care that people are downloading and enjoying the show. So
our downloads have really gone up. We really have a large listener base.
I think we're floating. Now, we're still a growing podcast, but I think we're floating around 200 downloads, just under 200 downloads a week, which, I don't know. For me, I think that's pretty awesome. I'm sure there's other podcasts out there that probably get like 1,000 a week. But
does it say what country they're coming from?
They're kind of all over the place. Most of them, it's almost like a 50-50 split between Canada and the U.S.
And I know we got one Australian listener because we got a message from an Australian guy, and he liked us on Facebook.
Who was that?
I don't remember now. I sent him a friend request anyway. I liked it. I go, oh, he's from Australia. And I sent him a friend request. I thought it was great that he liked the page. I think he's the same gentleman that writes into the Arm Squirrel Project.
Oh, okay. So, well, now I've put you on the spot, Angel. Silly. Let's end the show.
It doesn't take much to make me look silly.
All you gotta do is listen to my edit job, and that makes me look silly.
And we have no iTunes reviews. Our iTunes lady is away. She doesn't have access where she is.
Well, we may have iTunes reviews. We just don't know how to get them. I know how to get the Canadian ones.
It's just the American ones that we need to check. Not like I ever go on iTunes anyway. But as they're saying, if you get a lot of hits on iTunes, it puts you up in a more noticeable market area. Because Matthew was saying, because they're apparently the number one in the outdoor selection right now because they've gotten so many reviews.
I did say something about that on the last episode.
You actually listened to the last episode? You're so far behind in your podcast.
No, that one I do. Blue 2013. February 13th, that was our last one.
Oh, and Martin Reffelman Radio, they've gone back to doing it every other week. They're not recording weekly shows anymore. I guess between Kent's school and Brian's schedule, it's difficult for them to get out a weekly show. Yeah. And Action Shooting Radio hasn't had very many shows out right now because Pat's down in an IDPA match. I think he's Area 2 down in the States. And he's doing very well. He posted one of his stages, and he's running third in that stage, and we're talking 429 shooters, and he's holding his own.
Wow.
Go so Canada. Good luck, Pat. Hope you do well.
Show those Americans how to shoot.
Well, Pat's a good shot. He is really good.
Hey, put a broadside of a barn in front of me, and I'm a good shot, too.
Well, Pat Harrison would embarrass the hell of anybody I know at the range, so.
That's good. Good on him. I love it. Nice guy. I love it when the Canadians represent.
He's blowing away some top U.S. shooters right now. I don't know how he's going to place overall, but he's a very skilled marksman. I'm sure he'll represent us very well.
I believe Pat and Chris were the ones that were on the action shooting when I did the cowboy for them.
Yeah, when Pat Harrison and Chris Rakowski. Chris doesn't shoot open. He's more of a production shooter. Where I think Chris is a C-plus shooter. I'm not sure if his ranking's gone up. And I believe, I could be mistaken, that Pat is a master class shooter. I'm not sure if he's grandmaster or master. I think he's a master, but I could be mistaken.
I have no idea what any of that is.
Well, if you want to, Pat has some shooting videos on YouTube. So if you want to see a master class hipster shooter, go on and see some of Pat Harrison's videos.
Cool.
Anything else?
Nope. That is it. So until next time, keep your barrel pointed downrange. I suppose keep your bodies pointed downrange if you're holding a gun. Keep those barrels smoking.
And take a kid shooting. Good night, everybody.
Cheers.
I like guns. I like the way they look. I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small.
Thank you for taking the time and listening to our show. Our audience is important to us, and we encourage our listeners to contact the show with feedback, suggestions, or questions that you may have. You can contact the guys at hosts@newshootercanada.ca. And please like our Facebook page. Thanks for listening, and have a groovy day.
God made the animals and God made the trees. God made you, well, hell, he even made me. And he gave me this voice so I could be a singer. So you tell me why I've got a trigger finger. I like guns, I like the way they look. I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small. They're for sale, well, hell, I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns.